Global consumerism is a $40 trillion a year phenomenon, which makes it the largest, most predictable investment opportunity on the planet. Who are the prime beneficiaries of global consumption trends? Mega brands. Welcome to the Mega Brands podcast series. I'm your host, Eric Clark. In this podcast, we explore mega trends through the lens of a global investor with the ultimate goal of identifying the most relevant, most innovative brands that are best positioned to become what I call mega brands. These are the brands that are customer obsessed, have a corporate culture of innovation and self-disruption, create products and services that are in high demand, that exhibit strong brand love from customers, are serving a global opportunity, and appeal to multiple demographic groups. What's the reward for a company that meets these criteria? More revenue, more cash flow, higher market share, and the potential to reach the $1 trillion club. Please enjoy our next episode of Mega Brands.
Eric Clark is the portfolio manager for the Rational Dynamic Brands Fund in conjunction with his partners at Acuvest Global Advisors. All opinions expressed by Eric and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Acuvest Global Advisors or Rational Funds. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of the Brands Fund or Acuvest may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
Hey, everybody, it's Eric Clark, Portfolio Manager, Dynamic Brands, Global Brands Equity Strategy, focused on global consumer spending, the trends that we have as consumers, the brands that are most relevant in all of the key spending categories. Long term, these are industry leaders, blue chip brands, great businesses that generate strong free cash flow, grow their top and their top line, manage their bottom line really well. Great businesses tend to be great stocks. It's really that simple. And these are companies that are chasing a 40 plus trillion dollar a year phenomenon. So there's nothing that is larger than global consumer spending, which makes this theme the most important core allocation for an equity portfolio because it tracks the primary driver of every economy. That's the story, and I'm sticking to it. Welcome. It is Tuesday, July 11th, about 9:30 on the West Coast. Just wanted to do the audio version of the Q2 investment commentary for the Dynamic Brand Strategy. So, you know, the second quarter was a continuation of the positive trends in equity markets, largely since they bottomed in mid-October of last year. Pretty much everybody, particularly those with a macro focus or a firm investment strategist title, missed this whole rally. They all stayed too bearish for too long, even when sentiment was literally as low as it tends to go. And there was massive damage across some of the most wonderful businesses that were ever created. I mean, anytime a company like Amazon is down 50% on a year, I don't care what's happening, just buy the stock. That's my opinion, obviously. But, you know, it's a little meant for some shock value. But I mean, when great businesses go half off, just like when great merchandise goes half off, you buy the merchandise. Again, I am the master of common sense. So, you know, the rally off those lows was, as I said, unexpected by most macro strategists and investors, and has largely caught people off sides all year. So their equity allocations are somewhat dislocated from what they normally are. And I think that's probably why people are FOMOing right now and starting to buy names. In my opinion, they shouldn't even be buying. The market has started to broaden out, meaning not just the biggest, most impressive companies performing well. Money is rotated to secondary names. And that is a bit of a sign of a increased appetite for taking risk, but they're also buying names that, yes, they got destroyed in many cases, things like Affirm or Coinbase or, you know, some of those kinds of names, but those are businesses that generally aren't well run, aren't generating a lot of profits, aren't expected to generate a ton of profits, and are still largely expensive. So I don't know that that's a positive sign, as people feel like, wow, I really haven't performed very well this year because I was too bearish for too long. And now I need to start, you know, picking up and just holding my nose and jumping into the equity markets. That's not a good idea. Generally speaking, it can certainly last a little bit. We are certainly focused on quality most of the time. You know, if you look at the brand strategy, I'd say 80% or more of the holdings generally are leaders, those blue chip brands that are the high quality companies with good profits, with good cash flows, that have, you know, really good global aspirations, good global sales, good balance sheets, not too much leverage, et cetera. So the quality factor tends to be where we focus all the time. But around the core of quality, we tend to do some prudent speculation in what we call emerging mega brands that are things like DraftKings is a good example. A new category of sports betting and iGaming, it's them and FanDuel, and they're taking market share. They're rapidly approaching that period of profitability. I don't know how long they'll stay profitable, or when they are profitable, how profitable they will be. So it's certainly a name that isn't a core holding because it's more risky, more speculative. They're still not making money, even making money on a non-GAAP adjusted basis isn't really what I tend to look for. But long story short, I feel the FOMO today when I look through some of the names that are performing today. And that is a little bit of a caution sign. So we hold a little bit more cash, we move up in quality, and we use pullbacks to buy more quality, not get more engaged in more speculative names. So, you know, looking at the quarter, obviously it's been tech. You know, the NASDAQ 100 has performed exceptionally well. I think it was up 13% for the quarter and up over 32 or 33% year to date. The S&P 500 returned about 8 and change for the quarter and is up 16 and change. The dynamic brand strategy year to date through June 30th was up 21 and change, again, versus the S&P at 16 and change. So outperforming the market and doing it by being, you know, having a good, let's call it a 25% exposure to the mega brands, the Apple, the Google, the Amazon, the Meta, the Microsofts of the world. But we have some great names that are what I consider to be, you know, leaders and mega brands in their own right that are performing well year to date that nobody talks about. You know, Blackstone's up over 20%, had a rough year last year. So there's a lot to like about the market underneath the hood from a quality perspective, because the market's been a little bifurcated this year and lots of great businesses are only now just starting to get started from a performance perspective. So, you know, you don't have to move down in quality to find really good opportunities, at least for us, for the consumption theme. Market returns largely this year have come from technology, consumer discretionary, and communication services. Those three sectors happened to be the worst performers last year. So we're not really surprised to see the recovery this year, because in our opinion, most of those names never should have gotten as beat up last year as they did. It was one of those sell everything regardless of what it is. Interest rates are rising, inflation is high, the multiples need to come down, just sell it all. And that's, you know, that's pretty lazy in my opinion. It didn't feel good last year, but we were taking advantage of that weakness and buying a lot of those names that went on mega sale, and we're getting rewarded for that year to date. The S&P 500 equal weight index is up about 6.9 year to date through June 30th. And then the small cap index is up a little over 8% year to date. And the funny thing is, the bulk of those returns actually came in the month of June. So small caps pretty much weren't doing anything for the year up until the month of June. And we think, you know, that might continue a little bit longer, because 2/3 of the market's actually pretty cheap, around 15 times or less. It's just the most expensive, highest quality companies that are are more expensive, but you would think that they deserve a premium because they are premium businesses with lots of wonderful long-term opportunities. You don't buy a Mercedes for IKEA price. It just is what it is. As a reminder, our strategy is called Dynamic Brands because we do have a wide mandate. For most of the business cycle, investors should expect brands to have a persistent and heavy overweight to the leading consumer discretionary, in particular, consumer communication services and technology brands. That tends to be where the most important brands live from a sector perspective. So that's really where we're going to live or die in those sector decisions because we're focused on brands. This is a $40+ trillion theme of global consumer spending. Every major economy is anchored by consumers spending money on things they want and things they need. And, you know, during different periods of the economy and the business cycle, we certainly can get more defensive by owning more stable, predictable brands. They tend to happen to fall into the consumer staples and healthcare baskets. Those sectors tend to perform better in more choppy, difficult markets. This year is a very interesting one, though. And I think part of it is because there is a higher risk appetite. What's working is higher beta, growthier names. And so staples and defensives are underperforming year to date at a time when most strategists thought they would continue to outperform. And part of this is interest rates are really high. Consumer staples, you know, they tend to be slow growers and they tend to, you know, yield 2-4%. But when you can get 5 on a money market, maybe that's not as interesting to people. As the economy kind of slows down a little bit further, I do think there will be some interest in the staples and healthcare companies. But right now they are and continue to be laggards on a year-to-date basis. So it's really important. You know, I've had some conversations with advisors that kind of went like this. Eric, I love the theme. It's very common sense. It makes a lot of sense to me right now. I'm still a little nervous and cautious. I like knowing what I own. It helps me sleep at night. But when I look at the returns, they don't look as robust as the story might indicate. And the dates you use really matters. We took Dynamic Brands over in October of 2017, excuse me, and we inherited a really bad track record from the prior sub-advisors, and that's fine. Just judge the fund and the strategy from October of 2017. So 4 years into that, to the peak of the market in 2021, this strategy of investing in great brands serving a very large, important thematic around the world, annualized about 23% versus the S&P at 17 and change. So good outperformance versus the broader market by being anchored to a really important, really large thematic. Then we had the interest rate resetting. Inflation was really high, most of it because of our Fed and our politicians making silly decisions through COVID, which created the inflation that we have. But nonetheless, we had about 12 to 14 months of difficult markets because interest rates went from zero straight up to 5%. That's pretty disruptive in many cases. Candidly, it didn't really affect the businesses of the companies and the brands that we owned, but the market didn't care. It just sold everything off. And so we had a very difficult 2022, as most growth-oriented or biased strategies did. The strategy was down 35. We don't like that. We should have had more cash. We should have had more defensives. We chose to just buy more of great merchandise on mega sale, and that's helping year to date. So, and then as I said, year to date we're back outperforming the market. So basically, 5 years worth of outperformance on a general basis doesn't happen every year. We are designed to look very different than the market, because if you wanted the market, go buy the Vanguard S&P 500 index at 5 basis points, and that's all you need to do. You know, if you're going to pay an active fund to and pay the fee to be active, then you should look very different than the market. That's called high tracking error. That's what we focus on. We don't look very much like the index. In fact, some of our biggest holdings aren't even in the S&P 500 yet. Blackstone will be at some point, and I'm sure some of the others will. So it's really important that you understand the time frames that you're looking at, because you can't judge, or you shouldn't judge, any strategy by 1 year's performance. A lot of things happen in 1 year that may or may not be repeatable. And I would say that the bulk of the interest rate rising is now behind us, and the market's looking past interest rate hikes and some of the potential turmoil, and is just focused on the business of corporate America and how they can navigate higher inflation and higher costs of capital and interest rates. So, you know, we've done a really good job, and most people really don't have a ton of exposure, particularly to consumer discretionary. It's a sector that most people are chronically underweight, which is ironic given how important consumer spending is to the global economy. And that's really why you would want to own a fund and strategy like Dynamic Brands, because you have plenty of technology. You don't need more tech per se. You do need some other sectors that are good diversifiers and that have long-term histories of also outperforming the market, and consumer discretionary certainly does have a lot of those characteristics. Not every year, but most of the time. So let's talk a little bit more about the portfolio. You know, our team manages a core plus tactical approach to the strategy. The core holdings are what we call blue chip brands, and they are market leaders, as I've said, industry titans. And those are names like, you know, Apple and Amazon and Google and Microsoft and Meta. We haven't owned Meta all the time, but we bought Meta in the fourth quarter of last year when it was down 70%. It just seemed way overdone. And I still think it's, you know, a $325 to $350 stock at some point this year, as well as LVMH, Louis Vuitton, Hermes, the luxury goods provider in France, L'Oreal, Costco, Pepsi, you know, Visa, Lululemon, Nike, just to name a few. So those great core mega brands are names that we will tend to own most of the time. And then around that, we're going to own some things that we consider to be mega, you know, emerging mega brands, younger companies that are just doing something different and better and are taking market share even against some of our mega brands. And those names would be things like DraftKings or Mercado Libre, which is kind of the Amazon of Latin America. And then sometimes we just see tactical opportunities to just make a great trade. Sometimes one of the brands that we might not consider a long-term hold just gets too cheap and technically looks very attractive. And if we have some cash available, we can get in, get paid, get back out, and hold some cash. And if we can do that, particularly, you know, this year, my theme has been, you know, if you sit in cash, you can get about 5 or maybe a little more on money markets, but you got to wait a whole year. Well, if I can, you know, if I can find something that yield that'll give me, you know, 5% or more in a very short period of time, let's call it 2 weeks to a month max. Well, gosh, that's a pretty good use. If I can do that over and over again, I don't have to wait a year for that 5% return. I could do it over and over and over, rinse, repeat. So, you know, the market is really good at giving you great short-term opportunities because it does love to overreact sometimes. So some of the names that we fully sold in Q2, Estee Lauder was a tax loss harvest. They are really having a hard time with about 30% of revenues are in China. And China's been slow to recover. And I think U.S. brands will struggle a little bit in China because of the two countries and the tensions that we have there. So, you know, L'Oreal is just crushing Estee Lauder. And L'Oreal is the big mega brand in the category anyway, with almost 2 times the sales as Estee Lauder. So we took a good tax loss harvest that we needed, given some of the gains that we've created. Fryer Battery is more of an emerging mega brand. We sold that one. Regeneron, we sold that. United Healthcare, Tesla, Brookfield Asset Management, and Occidental Petroleum. New positions in the quarter. We added ServiceNow it's a small position currently because it's an expensive stock, but they are growing well. And I think that they will be a beneficiary of some of the consulting that happens through AI. We, added L'Oreal and Hermès back to the portfolio after some time being out. We have added T-Mobile on the tactical trade opportunity. We had a great trade in that is now not in the portfolio. So that was a kind of an in, get paid and get out opportunity that I just talked about. Pepsi is still in the portfolio for some stability. Live Nation on the live events is a new ad, and that we used to add. We had that one when COVID started to look like it was about as bad as it was going to get. We added that and some other travel names that were strong performers, and we have since re-entered in Live Nation because I think our interest in events is still strong. And I still think that stock is worth over 100. It's about 86 or 87 now, as well as DraftKings, which we just sold. So that's another opportunity of, you know, we added this thing June 16th. It was up about 16% in, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. The market was basically flat and we captured that gain and moved on. So we're flat on DraftKings. And I'd love to own that one because it does have some good momentum, but you have to identify whether something is a long-term core holding or it's a short-term trading opportunity to get in, get paid, and get out. Okay, so let's talk about a little bit of an outlook to close this this commentary. Again, rule number one, brands always matter. Rule number two, please refer to rule number one. Which brands to own, though, largely depends on where we are in the business cycle. When inflation is higher than normal and the price of everything is elevated, consumers complain, but they keep spending. But when that situation persists, consumers begin to change behavior. They start to trade down, which we're definitely seeing. They start to defer spending in certain categories that aren't, let's call it, you know, core needs or core must-haves. And they start making decisions. And so I'm not surprised the market is a little bifurcated because at least from a consumer spending perspective, we aren't spending broadly the way we were, generally speaking. We are making choices. And so your stock selection has to kind of be affected by that. We're still going to Costco, but maybe we're not buying a new couch because we've chosen to have a good vacation, you know, those kinds of things. And so how relevant a brand is at this important juncture really matters more than normal. Our portfolio is concentrated in a few important mega trends and secular themes, and through the mega brands, you know, that are dominating in those themes. And it's important. Demographics really do play a big role in our stock selection. And one of the most important parts of that is younger generations, right? Yeah, we all know that the older generations are where, generally speaking, where the money is. But, you know, after about 55, our spending tends to kind of peak and start rolling down. And baby boomers are older. They are saving. They have a lot of money. There's a lot of different estimates, but, you know, we have one that shows baby boomers have about $75 trillion of worth across their assets and their real estate. Their parents, what we call the silent generation, have another 17 or 18 trillion. And as those people get older, they start to gift. And then once they pass on, they tend to, you know, those assets tend to move to Gen X. I'm a Gen Xer. Sadly, I'm not going to be inheriting anything, but, you know, Gen X and millennials will be inheriting a lot of money over the next three decades. And that's going to have an effect on spending. I think it's going to be this silent X factor of consumer spending that people expect consumers to be tapped out. And there's just this mysterious bid under our balance sheets because not only are we employed and are in our general spending, earning, and saving years, but we're also getting a little gift from our parents. And there's a lot of money there. And millennials and Gen Z are larger in size than the baby boomers. And we all know what the baby boomers did to the stock market and the real estate market when they hit their saving, spending, and earning cycles in the early 80s. And we expect that to happen across the board here as millennials and Gen Z really continue to spend. And particularly in Asia, you know, there's probably about 2 billion people across Asia, including India, that are younger and are just beginning to make money and buy and aspire to more things and spend that money. So, you know, brands across all countries are really spending a lot of time and money trying to be the dominant brand as far as those generations are concerned across Asia and emerging markets. So that is a big theme. I'd say roughly 15% of the brand strategy are non-US brands that have global scope and influence particularly, and are growing in Asia and India. And most of the US brands that we own have a big presence outside of this country. So it is a truly global portfolio, even if, you know, let's say 85% or more of the brands are US centric, but they have lots of international sales. I love this quote from Ed Yardini, which is a great market researcher. He says, US consumers may run out of their excess pandemic savings by the end of the year, but they have lots of other sources of purchasing power. And we agree. And that's why we think, you know, people that are expecting consumer spending to fall off a cliff further, I think are just missing that little nuance there. So looking into the portfolio continues to be a little balanced between secular growth themes and stable, predictable, defensive businesses. And as we see a pullback in some of the growth stocks, we will use some of those defensive slow growers and those allocations as a source of funds for some of, you know, buying great quality growth brands on sale. And, you know, that tends to be what we do all the time. There's plenty of room for upside in our portfolio. Lots of people have said, you know, you're up 21 or whatever the number is through the end of the quarter. You know, have we missed it? And I don't think you've missed it at all. The market certainly can be choppy during periods, whether it's inflation headlines or Fed headlines or some macro stuff with Ukraine or China. We can always get short bouts of volatility that makes stocks pull back, but the average stock really hasn't performed that well year to date. And so I still think there's a lot of catch-up potential in names that we own. Blackstone, KKR, Apollo, Visa, MasterCard, those two have been laggards. Nike has been a laggard year to date, I think is super cheap. We've added to that one. Some of the healthcare names as well. And even, you know, Pepsi has been a bit of an underperformer. Staples have been underperformers. So we think there's some catch-up potential across, you know, half of our portfolio. And we do think that some of the names that have performed well that are maybe taking a little break and a breather, a well-needed breather right now in an Apple or Microsoft or Amazon or Meta, you know, there's some opportunities for those names also to continue higher as money rotates into some of the leaders after the you know, taking a little bit of a break after having a strong first couple of quarters. So, you know, there is still a lot of opportunity. We are not one thing. We don't just have our entire portfolio in the names that have performed the best. If we did, then I would say, yeah, then maybe there's some pause in the portfolio, but we are balanced by names that have done extraordinarily well this year and that never should have done as poorly as they did last year, with names that have good catch-up potential for the rest of the year. You know, Blackstone is our top holding, and I just love the business. I love the company. I love what they do. And that name is performed pretty well year to date, but I still think has a lot of catch-up potential, as do KKR and Apollo. And if you look at this group, this alternative asset management category, these companies have raised hundreds of billions of dollars over the last 3 years. They have a lot of dry powder to put to work. They are being very patient. I love that. They are investing in a part of the market that most investors really don't have any exposure to, which makes the stocks interesting and great diversifiers in a portfolio. They have a lot of opportunity to put money to work across real estate, private credit, which is really doing well this year from a flows perspective, infrastructure, renewable energy, as well as private equity. So this quarter and year are likely the trough for these businesses. So at current prices, you're buying companies at trough earnings with lots of dry powder to put to work, which will eventually start to add to their earnings and their distributable earnings. And that'll affect even their dividend rates, because right now these companies are under earning and they're going to mean revert back to traditional earnings rates. And that means there's going to be a meaningful step up in earnings over time. And, you know, Blackstone in particular, right now, based on current dividends, it yields about 3.5% today. But that dividend is based on distributable earnings. So every quarter, whatever their distributable earnings are, 85% of that number is what the dividend is for the quarter. But if you look out 2 years, that distributable earnings will be much higher. And so you buy the stock today, which is, you know, yielding 3.5%, but you're really yielding about 5.5% based on the distributable earnings estimate that we have over the next couple of years. And so what that means is you're going to get some serious dividend growth, about 60% dividend growth over the next few years, if we are correct with their distributable number. And that's the kind of situation. So you get a company that is a great earner long-term, generates great cash, great returns for investors in a part of the market that most people don't have access to, pays a great dividend, grows that dividend. That's not such a bad scenario in a catch-up play, in my opinion. So long story short, important trend of consumer spending, great wealth transfer, that I think will make consumer spending a lot more buoyant than most people think. There's always going to be short periods of time where the retail sales data looks, like consumers are really retrenching, but it never really lasts for very long. So those are great opportunities for active managers to buy great merchandise on sale. And you don't own enough beneficiaries to consumer spending, particularly in consumer discretionary, as you should. That's why the fund is very interesting. So thanks a lot for your time and listening, and we'll talk to you next quarter. Thanks for listening to Mega Brands, everybody. I'm your host, Eric Clark. For more information on this podcast and to learn more about the brand relevancy scoring system we use, be sure to check out the website at globalbrandsmatter.com. While you're there, make sure to sign up for the market newsletter and check out my latest thoughts on our favorite portfolio brands in the Dynamic Brands section. If you have any questions or want to learn more about the Dynamic Brands approach, send me a message on the contact tab. Thanks again for listening, everybody. Have a great day.